Hey, Dr. Christensen here with you. Today we will be mapping iodine on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-minute matrix, I'm welcoming Dr. Alan Christensen back to the mic. Dr. C is a New York Times bestselling author and a Phoenix, Arizona-based naturopathic medical doctor who specializes in natural endocrinology with a focus on thyroid disorders. He's the author of The Adrenal Reset Diet, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Thyroid Disease, and Healing Hashimoto's, A Savvy Patient's Guide, as well as his newest book, The Metabolism Reset Diet. And you can hear us talk about metabolism in his previous 15-Minute Matrix episode. However, today we're taking on the controversial topic of iodine. Welcome back to the 15-Minute Matrix, Dr. C.
Hey, Andrea. Thanks so much for having me again.
Well, I couldn't let you go without talking about one of your favorite topics, which is iodine. Talk to me about iodine.
You know, simple thing. It's the Goldilocks nutrient. Not too hot, not too cold. Too little wrecks your thyroid and too much wrecks your thyroid.
Yeah, there's so much controversy around this regarding the health of the thyroid. And I think people are either overdosing or megadosing, or they're super fearful of it. So maybe we can think through the lens of the matrix and talk about the things that would lead somebody to have low iodine and where iodine support would be helpful to begin.
There's some threshold below about 100 micrograms per day to where populations develop higher rates of goiter and also structural changes in the thyroid primarily. And that's not too common in the modern world with iodine fortification to salt, and also just with produce coming from a variety of different areas, you know, our food not always being just local, it's rather difficult to get lower than that. There's times in which someone should be lower just for testing purposes, and it takes some work to make a diet that's lower than 100 micrograms.
And in those situations, so we're likely coming from a place where the diet is limited, where the soil that the food is coming from is limited, where there's not iodized salt, they may have low iodine. And in that situation, why would iodine supplementation be beneficial?
Minerals have a lot of roles in the body, a lot of different mechanisms, and iodine, we can only tell, has one, and that's the formation of thyroid hormones. So in parts of the world in which there's iodine deficiency, then we'll see higher rates of cognitive developmental disorders, poor brain development because of this, and sometimes even growth suppression. So that's extreme. In the modern world, I've seen just a couple of cases of people who for, you know, periods of time were exclusively raw food, vegan, and then not even using any iodized salt or sea vegetables. And in those cases, one can get deficient, and often the first signs of that are structural changes to the thyroid. So what's happening is your brain is putting out a lot of thyroid-stimulating hormone, which is trying to make the gland work harder, but it really makes the gland swell by causing new cell growth. So if it's not working and there's too little iodine to function, then we'll see goiters or nodules emerge.
And for those on the other side, where they're getting plenty of iodine, but they have low thyroid function, hypothyroidism, and they're being told to megadose with iodine, what do you see happening as a result?
You know, it's tough, and this is paradoxical. It's easy to think that if a nutrient does something, people often think of it almost like an assembly line. You're building cars in an assembly line, and you crank up the assembly line, you'll get more cars coming out. But nutrients like iodine, I think of them more like a key to a car. If the key's missing, the car just won't go at all. Mm-hmm. And then once you got the key, the car works. But more keys don't change how the car works. I drive around a Jeep, and if I get 10 sets of keys, my Jeep will not be 10 times as fast.
Good point. That's a really good analogy. So if somebody comes in to see you in the clinic and they have read a book or heard somebody lecture on iodine use and they're feeling worse? What are you seeing when somebody is megadosing or supplementing with iodine and they don't need to?
It shuts down their thyroid. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, in the process of it coming back on, it can trigger a latent autoimmune response. One of the worst things in all of thyroid medicine is a thing called hyperthyroid storm. And that's a case with Graves' disease where there's so much thyroid hormone that someone can die from a heart attack. It's just so high and dangerous. And in that moment, the most surefire way to stop that is megadose iodine. So what happens is that because iodine is needed to make thyroid hormone, and because a lot of thyroid hormone is dangerous for your body, we've got a fuse built in. You know, it's like if you had too much current in one of your wires in your house, you blow a fuse so you wouldn't burn down your house. And it's the exact same way in the body. If you get above some threshold of iodine, a thing called the Wolff-Chaikoff effect engages, and it shuts off your thyroid for about 3 weeks. Mm. And if the iodine levels go back to normal, then it turns off, but sometimes it doesn't come back on right. And what I learned recently is that the way I described it sounds more like all or nothing, but in a lot of cases, if you're above some optimal level of iodine, maybe 300 to 600 micrograms, then it's not all the way stopping the gland, but it's slowing it partially.
Really interesting in terms of thinking about how the dose determines the poison and how patients are self-prescribing more and more often. And we're seeing the results of that in our clinics. On the opposite side of the spectrum, where do you see fear of iodine and then complete aversion to anything containing iodine from your patient population?
Maybe it's just my bias or the group that I work with. I don't see that as commonly. Pretty much everyone I see comes in because they've usually been on thyroid treatment, thyroid medication for years or decades. And this population is a little different. You know, they're sensitive to all things thyroid, obviously. They've got thyroid disease, but is the total day's iodine intake that's relevant. And the sweet spot for someone with thyroid disease is probably around 100 to 300 micrograms. So the whole day's intake, of course, there's the dietary amounts. We also think about what might be in supplementation, if they're using iodized salt. But then a big variable is thyroid medication. People on thyroid medication are often well within or even at the upper limit of what a healthy iodine intake is just from their thyroid medicine. So in those cases, it can be a rational strategy just to minimize any other sources they can control.
What about the balancing act that happens between minerals? Do you see that come into play where you're looking at, let's say, iodine and selenium balance?
For sure. There are some that where an excess can push out the other, like zinc and copper. Iodine and selenium, the best way to think about it chemically is that selenium is really a buffer. So if you're off on iodine, you've got a group of people that are all a little low. Not everyone gets goiter. And if they're a little high, not everyone develops autoimmune disease. Those who are selenium deficient are more apt to develop problems when iodine fluctuates by small amounts. So having adequate selenium does give someone a little more leeway, and they're less apt to have problems from just the slight excesses or deficiencies of iodine.
And when you're testing for iodine, do you have a preferred method of testing in the clinic?
I would prefer that there was a method, but there's not. I've researched this just ad nauseum, and there's no shortage of iodine tests. They certainly exist. But the difficulty is that how much iodine is in the blood doesn't really reflect what's in the thyroid, and how much iodine leaves the body in the urine varies tremendously whenever you pee, even if you collect urine for 24 hours. So a 24-hour urine test, for example, if you wanted to be within 90% accuracy, you've got to do that test about 250 times. So there's a lot of good tests to see how much iodine a population has. You check 1,000 people and whatever highs and lows there are, you know what the group has. But you can't really extrapolate that accurately to individuals. Thankfully, that unlike with some other nutrients, there really aren't known variabilities in terms of iodine absorption or iodine elimination. You can really gauge someone's iodine status just by being aware of what their iodine intake is.
So you would be tracking their food as just an idea about their iodine intake rather than worrying about some measurement?
If there were a measurement, it might be useful, but there's just not an accurate one. There was a study that came out not too long back showing that people that were newly diagnosed with hypothyroidism with average TSH scores as high as 14, you know, pretty hypothyroid,
yeah,
that iodine restriction below 100 micrograms per day reversed the hypothyroidism in 78% of people within, 6 or 8 weeks. It was pretty reasonable time frame. It can make a huge, huge difference by being at that low range.
And what are your clinical recommendations for avoiding iodine?
That's one consideration. I was thinking about just those levels in food categories, knowing how much someone's getting. So the main food categories are going to have a lot of that are going to be sea vegetables.
Right.
White meat fish is not quite as high. And I only say that because there's so much health benefit to it. I hate to cut it completely. Shellfish is moderate. And then also darker fish can be moderate. Dairy is one of the higher sources. And then processed grain products. It's not even innately the grains. It's more so that a lot of dough conditioners are commonly used in bread products that cause it to add up. So apart from those big sources and then supplements that contain iodine or iodine primarily supplements, then one's intake is below that threshold generally.
And if you see somebody who you suspect having a lot of iodine in their diet, or you're suspecting some sort of iodine toxicity, is there a way that you would look at that detoxing process? Would that be the elimination of the food, the inclusion of selenium, anything else that you would be doing there?
You always want to be sufficient on selenium. Selenium doesn't so much like push out iodine, but if you've got it, you've got more leeway. So yeah, you want to get adequate selenium. Then it's really just a matter of being aware of those high iodine food categories and just cutting them down for whatever the appropriate window of time is.
When we look at the immune area of the functional nutrition matrix, I know that in addition to the thyroid, iodine's gotten a lot of press, so to speak, around cancer prevention or working with cancers, particularly breast cancer. Why is that? What's that mechanism? Can you speak into that?
It's really speculative. There's strong evidence that iodine does treat fibrocystic breast disease. And that's been the basis for thought about it being a big factor for breast cancer. There's also tiny amounts of iodine that show up in breast milk, in the same way we put other nutrients in breast milk for an infant. But there's not really evidence that iodine intake, apart from thyroid function, is a big variable for breast cancer. And the fibrocystic breast disease, honestly, this is kind of what spurred a lot of the excess hype and zeal about iodine. So nutrients work two different ways in your body. They have a specific role that they play, like a key to a vehicle. And then also they can work in a drug-like way, a pharmacologic way. This is silly, but say you had 100 keys and you put them inside of a sock. Maybe if you had to get through a window, you locked something out, you could break a window with that sock full of heavy keys, right?
Right.
That's not what the keys were meant to do. That's almost like the pharmacologic role of a nutrient. Megadoses of niacin can block a liver enzyme and lower cholesterol. Doesn't mean that high cholesterol is a niacin deficiency.
Right.
So someone didn't quite get that distinction, and they saw how megadose iodine, approximately 14,000 micrograms per day, was a consistent treatment for fibrocystic breast disease. They then theorized that women with fibrocystic breast disease were iodine deficient. And no, that was a pharmacologic role. But all the idea about iodine and breast cancer, a lot of it came from that original line of thought, which was built on some faulty premises.
I like to think of that as correlative versus causative. And there are times when the correlative information can be helpful. And this is one where it took a big leap. So Dr. C, I'm wondering, what happens when you're in a room with another medical practitioner who's an iodine zealot? Are you willing to take them to the mat?
I've had those discussions before. And, you know, if I start a discussion saying, look, if we can just talk about evidence at a high quality level, it's pretty straightforward. There's a lot of just speculation, and some of the iodine stories get pretty odd. They talk about Adam and Eve and the water of the flood of Noah washing iodine away from the earth and needing more of it since then. There's some pretty bizarre things they fall back on. But if they can stick to just, you know, human evidence and what we know from research, then it's pretty straightforward discussion.
And are you an advocate of including sea vegetables and those other foods you mentioned in moderation?
I am. I always prefer people having just more dietary variety over longer term rather than less.
Any other key points about iodine that you feel like practitioners should be aware of in their practices, in their clinics?
Well, heck, a lot of things come up. There's the iodine, we're talking about iodine tests. I didn't mention the iodine skin test. There's that one that's
right.
Talked on occasion,
yeah.
Too.
What do you think of that?
Well, also the concept is that you would absorb it more if you need it. And it's intuitive, it makes sense, but they studied it pretty well back in the 30s. And it turns out whether you've got good thyroid function or not, or whether even you're alive or dead. And they test this on cadaver skin. all those groups, there's no consistent difference between iodine absorption across the skin. So it's just pretty random.
Also speculative.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking to us about iodine, Dr. C. I know you're very passionate about the topic, and I think you made it very clear for us today.
Well, good. Hope it was helpful.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, and Carla Schaefer on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more great episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode ready and waiting for you, please head over to 15minutematrix.com/notify. Let us know, and we'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a really short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. Plus, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us. You can always do so at ask@15minutematrix.com.